Grunfe is our man for this time.
Right.
He's still relevant.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Clay Warren. He's a professor of communication at George Washington University, also chair of the department, and he has edited a fascinating book that is dedicated to Niccolo Grundtvig, the Danish educator who lived from 1783 to 1872, is a contemporary of Søren Kierkegaard, Hans Christian Andersen. He's been called the Danish Carlyle, as well as the Danish Ralph Waldo Emerson. Clay, let's talk about Grundtvig, and I realize I'm mispronouncing his name. Grundtvig has a special place around the world in terms of adult education in particular, lifelong learning. What's the essence of Grundtvig's educational educational philosophy?
People learn by talking with each other, by learning that their voice counts, that they should speak out, have an opinion, and be able to say it coherently with others in a community.
And talk, you mentioned the folk high school. This is a concept that is more common in the Scandinavian countries and the German countries. What is the folk high school that he helped pioneer?
It's a residential school, ideally about a semester long, where people come to reinvent their meaning of life. So it isn't subject-oriented, it isn't test-oriented. You don't get a degree at the end, but you get a good feeling for what do I want to talk about with others, study, learn in a democratic community.
And you keep going to that. I mean, it's not just something when, you know, between the ages of 6 to 18 or even university level.
18 to 80 or older. So throughout your life, you might, you know, take another time in the folk high school.
And talk a little bit about just how radical or outside of the box this was, because this is a guy, again, a contemporary of Kierkegaard and of Hans Christian Andersen. He's in 19th century Europe. How beyond what was considered normal was he?
Completely outside the box. He was a philosopher, a religious priest in a wider sense than what was generally thought of as the Lutheran minister of the time, because he thought, well, he actually had his own church in Copenhagen where people participated in the service. They sang their own hymns, many of which he wrote himself. He was also a poet. He believed that every Dane needed to have education. And if you think about what was going on in 1800 Europe in general, many people didn't have any education past, you know, a little bit. The professionals went on to higher Latinized learning, you know, became professors, but most people dropped out, didn't have education.
So, I mean, there's this incredible small d democratic spirit in this, of that everybody, every individual has an individual voice and an individual set of ideas and urges or interests that they should develop fully and then be able to communicate.
Yes, and that was completely radical for that time.
It's actually still kind of radical.
It right? is.
So talk a little bit about his influence in American education, because as you were saying, he hasn't really been translated that much, but he has had a powerful impact on our concept of education, especially continuing education.
Most people, when they go back in adult education in America, point to a fellow named Edward Lindemann. He wrote a small but important book called The Meaning of Adult Education. Back in the 30s and so on, most people from then on quoted him. Mm-hmm. Lindemann passed himself off, it's a complex story we don't have time for, as a Dane. But he was really German, didn't want to be. So people talked about the homeland of his parents as though it was Denmark, and it wasn't. He couldn't speak Danish, he couldn't read Danish, but he went back to look at the folk high school action. He loved Grunfe. He heard a lot of the talk. He got the philosophy orally in hand, the living word again, as Grunfe is the way of being in the world, brought it back to the United States, put it in his book. And so one of the things I've done when I've looked mm-hmm. at that in the School for Life is to model what did he say and what are the principal tenets of American adult education. They're the same.
Talk a little bit about how Grunfe was distinct from German education. The German education model, which was very influential, especially in the U.S., whether we're talking about kindergarten or a kind of research university, right. What did Grunfe think of German education, and you know, how does that play out today?
Well, he thought it was okay if you're going to be a professor, mm-hmm. but most people wouldn't be that. So he thought it was a little stuffy, too formal. It was based on dead languages, Greek and, you know, Latin. Right. Why do that if you're a normal person? And at that time, most were farmers.
Yeah.
That didn't mean they shouldn't have education. he was always worried, you know, it wasn't just World War I and World War II where Germany tried to take over countries. Germany for years tried to take over Denmark. He thought the only way to really put a handle, you know, to stop that is if all citizens united, knew that their country was important, knew how to speak out, and collective spirit and so on.
Is he, does he anticipate Maria Montessori in a kind of student-based learning experience, or is, you know, was there much interaction there?
Again, if people had read his writing, the answer would be yes. Montessori is very much Grundtvigian, as is, let's say, Paulo Freire in Pedagogy of the Oppressed. All of this, you know, is after Grundtvig, and a lot of people point to that. I mean, I wrote down a few names, actually, in Europe, in, or outside of at least the United States. And yes, there are a lot of folk high schools in Denmark. It's estimated that 1 out of 10 Danes at any one point is in a folk high school, amazingly enough. But of course, all of Scandinavia has them, and Germany, as you mentioned. Japan, a fellow named Matsumi, founded Tokai University and 100 private educational institutions in Japan, gives credit to Grundtvig. He spent time in Grundtvig, went to folk high schools, modeled his whole system of thinking after that. De La Torre in Philippines, leading member of the resistance during the Marcos regime, Grundtvigian. Time in Denmark, modeled his philosophy.
What is the continuing relevance or the urgent relevance of Grundtvig for 21st century America?
Let me stay with Europe for a moment. Nowadays, the lifelong learning program established by the European Parliament and Council has 4 schools, principally for developing countries, but not only. So you can apply for a grant. They call them Comenius for the lower schools, Erasmus for higher education, Grundtvig for adult education, and Leonardo da Vinci for vocational education. This is just a, you know, 2 or 3 years old. A lot of people are applying. They're interested in trying to ramp other people up, helping them here get the spirit and so on. In the United States, probably the single most important institution, we've had a number, but for American style of being, they want a credit, they want a degree, what's the bottom line? It's been a little hard. But Highlander in Tennessee played a significant role in the American rights movement. Since we just had March on Washington, right, a week ago, a couple weeks ago. Imagine the list of people studying there. Martin Luther King Jr., Eleanor Roosevelt, Ralph Abernathy, John Lewis, Pete Seeger, the singer, even Rosa Parks prior to her historic refusal to give up a seat in a bus in Alabama. All those people studied at Highlander. It was so active, in fact, that Tennessee shut it down in 1961. Too active.
So what about now? I mean, what's the most urgent message of Grundtvig for contemporary American education?
Well, of course, I live in a university, but that doesn't mean that Grundtvigian thought, right, does not have relevance nowadays. In fact, if you think of MOOCs, if I have to take the most radical thing out there for us right now through an electronic medium and so on, it would be the MOOC, Massive Open Online Education.
Right.
But if you take that down to its core philosophy, it is essentially Grundtvigian. You don't have to have a degree to get into it. Really, you don't have to pay for it at the moment. Anyone who wants to learn can get in there and learn. It doesn't have the living word. It could have, if we had study circles after the MOOC experience, it could be a total Grundtvigian experience for the century.
It seems that his work and his example would offer up a lot to both the charter school movement, a kind of flowering of individualized curricula, as well as this idea. I mean, I guess Bill Clinton talked about it in the 90s of lifelong learning. It seemed kind of sketchy then, but what he offers is a way of continuing, of not just segmenting education off so that when you're 21, you're done unless you're going on to grad school.
Well, to me, with all of the possible good things with electronic, you know, media and so forth that we have nowadays, I mean, you've seen it, I've seen it in our kids. Rather than go out and pick up a soccer game outside, they put on the headset, dial up Xbox 360, and have virtual warfare with each other, applying the rhetorical insult at the end.
Right. So that's Grundtvigian as well.
That is, in a way, Grundtvigian, but let's get them outside in action with each other, right? And get to that model, that would be even better.
Yeah.
So I think it's a, if I may mention libertarianism for a moment, if you think about what's going on there, the emphasis on individual liberty, political freedom, voluntary association, you don't have to love Leonard Cohen to realize that he's your man, Grundtvig. He's our man for this time.
Right.
He's still relevant.
Because he centers things on voluntary association, on right. individual potential and development,
right.
and continued engagement with the world around you.
That's it.
All right. That's well, the book that you put out is The School for Life, and that's available on Amazon.
It is.
I want to thank Clay Warren. He is the chair of the Communications Department at George Washington University and the co-editor of School for Life, a book that is dedicated to both translations of Grundtvig's work and also explications of its meaning. Clay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Nick.
For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.